So, at any rate, I kept trying to get high all the time to get rid of all this trippiness. Because it all seemed so finite. And I felt something was wrong about the direction I was going, because everybody else was sort of doing the same thing in the 60s, early 70s. Alan Watts, I remember, tried to remind me. He was a good friend, and one night we had been tasting the altar wine at a Benedictine monastery, and it was around 2 in the morning in his room, and he said, "Dick, your problem is you're too attached to emptiness." And it was true, because form seemed so entrapping to me that I really wanted to be empty. I kept hearing the messages in the spiritual teachings, there's nowhere to stand. But I kept refuting it in my mind because I still wanted to stand out there looking back down. It was so safe. It was so free of any emotional pain. And a lot of people get high in order to get out of emotional pain. I mean, you look up there and you're standing up there and you're looking out and you're seeing how it's all perfect and beautiful, and somebody falls down and you say, "Karma." See, there's no heart in it. Then I met another friend his name is Emmanuel. He's a spook, and he's a disembodied being. Everyone has them these days. They're no big deal. They're a dime a dozen, actually. And the thing about disembodied beings is they're just like embodied beings. Some of them are smart, some of them aren't. You can't just figure because somebody doesn't have a body they know anything, because that's off the wall, you know. Somebody who was like really caught in good and evil on this plane, and then they die, and then they figure they'll send back a message. So they send back a message like, "Buy canned tuna and move to Oregon," or something like that. Everybody goes, "Oh, yeah. But just because a person, I mean, I have friends who are supposedly very liberal, and they'll say, "I'd like any of your friends that you would introduce me to," and they'll take any of my weird friends. "How do you do? Nice to meet you." But when I tell them I have a friend that doesn't have a body, even my most liberal friends, amazing what prejudice lurks. Some of them say, "Well, I don't know about that." You know, it's very far out, as if, I mean, can you imagine being prejudiced about somebody just because they don't have a body? You know? So you can't give up your intuitive. The reason I like Emmanuel is because he agrees with me. I mean, he says it just the way I understand it to be. So I said to Emmanuel, I talked to him through this woman, Pat Rodegast. I don't talk directly to him. He's not my spook. He's Pat's spook. I said to Emmanuel, "What am I doing here? Who made this error? I mean, how did I end up on Earth? I mean, why aren't I divine? I know I'm divine." And he said, "Ram Dass, you're in school. Why don't you try taking the curriculum?" He said, "Why don't you try being human?" See, I'd never thought of that. See, I thought that was the error. I mean, this is profound, by the way. Sounds simple. Because it slowly has been dawning on me over the past 8-10 years that the game wasn't to be high, the game was to be free. And the free meant you couldn't push anything away and you couldn't grab at anything. There was nowhere to stand. And there was nowhere not to stand. And that I was, whatever this incarnation, whatever level of reality this was, I had to inhabit it impeccably to be free within it. And the freedom was going to come through my incarnation, not in spite of it. And that I was going to have to learn to be, as Christ said, in the world, but not of the world. And that all the things I'd pushed away, I was going to have to take the curriculum sooner or later. That turned around the direction of my life a lot. Because until that time, when I was busy just trying to get high to get enlightened, and I thought enlightened was high, that was a confusion in my mind. During that time, I really begrudged the price of living on the earth. I begrudged, and I constantly saw that I wanted to push away all the experiences of life. It's interesting, when you want to get high, suffering is a real drag, and you want to avoid suffering as hard as you can. When you want to be free, you begin to hear the teachings of the Buddha about the cause of suffering being the clinging of the mind. And when something creates suffering in you, you don't go asking for it unless you're really advanced, I guess, but when the suffering comes down the pike, you don't turn away from it, because you know that the only reason you're suffering is it's telling you something about the clinging of your own mind. And it's being offered to you as a gift. This gets very weird, because it turns the whole game around. As Rumi says, at first, before you're awakened, you go towards water and you avoid fire. After you begin to awaken, you go towards fire, and that brings you into the cooling quality of the water. That instead of going for pleasure, you go for freedom. And it's a very different style of life. And a lot of things that you would have avoided because they brought you down, because you see that the only thing that brings you down is your own mind. It's not the city. The city's just sitting itself. It's being essence city. What are you getting so upset about? It's your reaction to the city that's what's doing it to you. And so, like the other night, I was in Des Moines, Iowa. And I came into the hall in the evening, and there were people waiting around front, and they said, "There's Ram Dass." And see, I'm like a rent to Ram Dass. I have no idea who I am, and I don't even care. I mean, I'm just an awareness, and I do what I got to do. So, since I don't know who I am, as people project into me, I become what their projection is a lot of the time. Somebody says, "Ram Dass," and I go, "Yes." You know, it's like if somebody says, "Hi, Dick," I say, "Hi." I don't care. See, if you're somebody and they go, "Hi, Dick," you say, "Yes." You see, and it doesn't work. So I came to the hall and everybody was Ram Dass, and I was, "Yes, yes," and I was smiling, and I was being Ram Dass. You know, it's a nice role. I'm not anybody. What the difference does it make to me? I mean, I'm not all those things. It's not like I'm phony. See? It's not like I'm being somebody else back in there. It's not that. It's just a form. We're all in forms. We can't meet except through forms. We don't have to get lost in them. Who will we be this time? Well, I'll be serious. Okay, I'll be light. So I came in the hall, and I was being sweet and loving, and every evening I always ask for a mini boom microphone. That's one of these things. Because when you're sitting cross-legged, if you have a straight mic, you got to spend the whole evening leaning forward like that. So I asked for this, and I walked into the hall, and there was a straight microphone. And I was all smiling, and I suddenly said, "What's that?" And the woman was the manager of the hall, said, "Well, that's the only microphone we had." And I said, "Well, we advised you we needed a..." And I started to get into this curmudgeon-y yuck. And I broke up completely. I mean, I just saw myself get completely ugly, and I broke up because what I saw was that my guru had come in drag as a microphone to say, oh, you think you're so high and mighty, you know, try this one on for size.